Welcome to the Dividend Talk podcast, episode number 10, when to sell dividend growth stocks. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Dividend Talk. I'm your co-host, Engineer My Freedom, and today I'm joined with European DGI. This is a podcast where we discuss our passion for dividend growth investing with our own unique European flavour. If you're new to our channel, please hit the like button and subscribe to us. And also check out our previous episodes on YouTube and Spotify and all your other favourite platforms. See you on the inside. Episode 10 already. Man, that's so crazy. I remember starting this, I think nearly 2 months ago, and I never believed we'd kind of get this far. I'm here, as always, with European DGI. How are you, man? How are you doing?
I'm good. Really looking forward for episode 10. I think we have a nice topic today.
Yeah.
To sell stocks.
It's a nice milestone to hit, isn't it? Your first 10 episodes, and it seems to be going pretty well so far.
Yeah. You know, before you know it, we are married to EMF.
A little bit soon. So how's your week been? Have you anything on the news or anything with yourself? How's it going?
First of all, my week just was really busy again at work. I don't know how it's for our listeners, but I have a feeling that this vacation time or the summertime was a little bit different than other years. It was just really busy. Just the type of work shifted as well. But yeah, from a news point of view, I've been actually watching a little bit on YouTube the DNC convention from the Democrats where they announced Joe Biden as the new president-elect, I think they called it in America. Mm-hmm. I'm watching this because I have a feeling that this will be a really important variable for the stock market coming up. So this is also the news that I have for this week, that really the election started now. Next week, Trump will have its convention. And Why I'm picking this out from the news, because I remember really clearly when Trump got elected that the stock market really reacted really strongly. I remember that like in a matter of time, it grew 20%. You know, he came in and I'm going to cut taxes. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I think the only indicator he has for his success as being a president is, how is the NASDAQ and how's the S&P 500 doing? He tweets a lot about it. So if I look also at the policies that they have been doing, it's all the time about stock market is at record high. We are doing well. When I hear the narrative from Joe Biden, I hear him talking about actually the opposite a little bit. We need to look after our people, healthcare. This will cost money. We will probably need to increase taxes. So no matter of what political flavor you are, I'm definitely not a Trump supporter. But whatever flavor you are, it just tells me that if there comes a president that is not using the S&P 500 as a measure of success and actually could care less about it, I believe that the market has currently priced in that Trump is a president. So I expect that once Biden gets elected, that we might see a drop of at least 10 to 20%. And I call that the Trump premium. That will be out of the market. So for me, this is really interesting to follow that now as an investor, not even because I'm not an American. I don't live there. I'm purely interested in this from an investment point of view.
Yeah, I did see an article. I think it was on Seek and Alpha. I must try to route it out a couple of weeks ago about the effects of the different presidents that go in there, whether Republican or Democratic, and the effects that that has had on the stock market, both in the short and long term. And if I remember correctly, when the Democrats went in, there was nearly always a drop. Now, I don't have the data with me, so I must look it up and probably post about it. But it's certainly from a historic point of view, it may be worth seeing the effects that a Democratic president has had compared to a Republican. And it may look, history, they say never, I mean, it may not happen in the future, but history certainly does repeat itself, and we are reaching all-time highs. So it might be something to look at. If there is a drop historically, we may be facing that again. So it might be something to just prepare for And I know it's something that we might talk about later on in your stock pick, so we'll keep that for later. But it's definitely going to be an interesting time. It's probably a topic that's going to come up a lot in the next few weeks as they start ramping up to the election. So it's from a European standpoint, it's fascinating, and it's fascinating to see how this all plays out. I mean, we all have elections over here, but not quite as in focus as they are in America. So it'll be interesting from the spectator's point of view, but as you said, as an investor, and the effect that's going to have on our portfolios is going to be massive. Yeah. So I'm definitely going to be interested in it too.
I always consider the quote, if America sneezes, Europe gets a cold. And that's how I also look at it from an investment point of view.
Yeah, and look, it's true. We can deny it if we want, but it is true. We do kind of catch the cold, so to speak, from America. Yeah. So it's still in our interests what happens across the water.
Exactly. So how about your news?
So like you, I've had a super busy week in work. It's from the lockdown, and we were shut down for a couple of weeks. It's just ramping up, and we're trying to catch up on last time. So I haven't had too much. I've been quite on Twitter and been quite online. What I've done is actually recorded a podcast as a guest for Financial Independence European podcast yesterday, which was, it was fun. It was nice to be on the other side and be a guest and have questions directed to me. So I was preparing for that a little bit. One thing that I did see today and talking about passive income and financial independence was Mark Zuckerberg hit the £100 billion club. Like, that's $1 billion. That's crazy. That's a crazy amount of money. Like, how one person can be worth that amount of money. I think he's the third or fourth person to be to be worth that. So it's crazy. And we're just on the small scale. We just want to reach a percentage of that just to be independent. So it's fascinating to see how much money is out there and how much money is in these tech stocks. Elon Musk, I think, is crawling up behind him just about. So he's nearly there as well. It's a crazy amount of money.
What you mentioned was actually interesting. First of all, about joining the other podcast, but I also heard we are ranked somewhere in the podcast list, right? Could you tell a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so there's this website called BeatSpot. Good little website. I always use it for my blog and to find other blogs. I'm signed up to it. But I think we're ranked 47th out of 75 on it, which is fantastic for
us. In the middle.
Yeah, it's a good starting point, isn't it? I don't think we expected. I remember we recorded our first podcast, we called it a pilot episode, and we were thinking that, hey, we don't know if people are going to actually listen to us, so we see how it goes. Yeah. But it's, look, I'm enjoying it, and it seems to be growing. There's certainly listeners there, so I'm delighted to be doing it.
Cool. Yeah, and around the 100 billions, it's just a lot of zeros, and I think at a certain moment, I guess it doesn't matter anymore how many zeros there are. Yeah. I just wonder. And I would love to ask Mark Zuckerberg, like, what was the amount of zeros that he stopped counting zeros?
he's only got 10 fingers.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that's where it stopped, and that he said to his wife, you know, let's stop it. Let's have a charity or something like that that looks after the next zeros.
Yeah. I mean, 12 digits, it's crazy. It's a crazy amount of money, but look, he deserves it. He built an empire, so you can't can't judge him on it.
Yeah. Cool. So let's go to the main topic of for today. When to sell a stock?
When to sell our dividend growth stocks. And this is a bit of a touchy subject sometimes, isn't it? It's for me personally, it's been a bit of a journey over the last 12 months on this particular subject of when to sell. I know like the dividend growth investor, the real OG, I suppose, of this world is quite clear. Once there's a dividend cut, he sells. And it's the way I used to be, but it's certainly a different take on it. But from your point of view, what's your selling point? What would cause you to sell a stock at the moment?
Yeah. So I just in preparation of this show, I think there are like five bullets or five reasons for me to sell a stock, and I might actually miss something, but one is definitely a dividend cut. So every time there's a dividend cut, I will at least evaluate what I want to do. For me, then it's really important, like, what's the story of the stock? Did I anticipate the dividend cut? Of course, I don't buy a stock when I buy it. It might, like, oh, they will might cut tomorrow, right? Because that means there are usually some serious issues. However, I didn't sell with Shell because I still believe that Shell is onto something with the liquid natural gas as a transition energy. I also thought, like, well, you know, if you think from an opportunity cost point of view, it still gave a good yield at that price. So does it make sense to sell now? Because if I would look at other stocks, probably I would see Shell at that at the level that it is now. I still see it as an interesting investment. Yeah, I have a loss, but the loss is for me a sunk cost. It's gone. I won't get that back. Yeah. So then's the question, what do you do then with your money? And I still want to be in energy. I still believe that we need oil. I still believe that we need gas. Yes, I think the transition is going a bit quicker than my initial thesis maybe it might have been. So in this case, I didn't sell it. But if, for instance, Disney, I did sell it. And that was because I lost really trust in management. And actually with Shell, some people could also argue that they lost trust in management. I saw on a tweet somewhere that 3 weeks before the Ben van Beurden still says, like, oh, dividend safe. I personally never heard it. I had a feeling that the signals were already there, that a dividend cut was coming. But with Disney, it came for me really falling out of the sky. And then when I look at their business model in COVID-19 times, I felt like there are better opportunities. So I then put it in Chubb because it was also really down. So it's for me really, I would say, an opportunity cost discussion once a dividend is cut. So I'm not like black white, but I would say that most of the times I've sold after a dividend cut because really the fundamentals changed.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the key, isn't it? If your thesis or fundamentals change. And I sold Disney just like you did. And I mean, I was asked this question and I discussed it before, but for me, I believe that, I mean, COVID has had a massive impact on them and the management as well. I'm a little bit iffy on, but I believe in 2 years' time, I'd be sitting here and I'd be still unsure on what direction they're going. Or I don't think their price will move a whole lot. They're in for a lot of headwinds. I don't think that Disney, the online streaming, has took off as well as they wanted. I could be wrong on that, but just general feedback or feeling I get from that. So I'm quite happy with the decision to sell Disney. As there's definitely better opportunities there. But I suppose I don't really like selling stocks at the moment. I like to keep them, even with a dividend cut. It's only if the fundamentals change or my outlook on them if they change. And I suppose there's a lot of deadwood in my portfolio that I'm cutting at the moment. So that's another reason why I'm selling. Is I'm trying to trim down my portfolio. I have 40 stocks. It's way too many for me to manage consistently and with enough conviction or with enough, you know, to constantly go through them. So I'm trying to narrow that down to about 25. So I am selling some stocks. I sold Target, for example, this week. I bought them at a really, really good price. I bought them about $68, and they've more than doubled that. So I sold them. I think they're really overvalued at the moment, and with the concerns in the market, I don't see much growth in them this year or in the next year or so. So I kind of got rid of them. So it's really fundamentals for me is where it comes down to. And other than that, a dividend cut, it doesn't really play a part anymore. All that does is triggers me to look. I need to research these again and see where they're going. That's about it.
Well, there are two interesting other things that you mentioned, which also would trigger me to sell a stock. You mentioned portfolio cleanup. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's also a reason to sell. For instance, something that happened to me was that I bought United Technologies, I think half a year or 9 months ago, and quickly after they announced a merger with Raytheon. So what happened after that, it spun off two other stocks. It switched into Raytheon. I didn't want to own Raytheon. So for me also, again, the whole investment thesis changed. So also for me, when a company gets acquired, that's for me always a typical reason to consider, do I want to keep it or not? In this case, I kept it a little bit, but it was not out of a conscious decision. It was also like that COVID-19 and everything happened. It was a really small position for me, so I just hadn't got any attention to it. So actually, 2 weeks ago, I sold all this stuff that I got from UTX, as spin-offs and everything, and just sold it. I even made a little bit of a profit on it, on the holding. But that's also, for me, reasons to sell. So portfolio cleanup in general because of spin-offs, but also when a company gets acquired.
Yeah.
Because it's not the same company anymore as why you purchased it. So the question is also, again, what will the dividend policy be? Sometimes it's just unknown. And there are some great stories of spin-offs, right? Like PM, like the tobacco stocks from Altria, PM, and some others. So there are really some great, Upfi, for instance, a great spin-off from Abbott. But for me, it's also, again, a time to reevaluate after an acquisition.
Yeah, definitely. And just to touch on the psychology of selling a little bit, do you find it hard to sell if you bought a stock and they cut a dividend and the price drops 50% and you're going to lose 30, 40, 50% of what you put into it? Do you struggle to sell? Or even if
yes, honestly, yes, I do struggle a little bit, but that is really related. So for Disney, I didn't struggle at all. It was like, I was pissed off, gone.
Yeah.
With Shell, I still see this energy transition happening. And for me, it's a gas company. It's not an oil company anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm still betting on this energy play. And I see no, if I think about like wind energy and such, then I rather think about Siemens that sells the equipment, because I don't see really, I don't know any profitable business that is selling solar panels or something like that, a utility company. So I don't see, I know there are few, but for me, they didn't sound interesting enough for me.
Yeah.
So yes, it is therefore hard for me to consider selling Shell for that reason. But this is not so much when it comes to a dividend cut, but I wanted to touch a little bit on the falling knife. Yeah. Because it's really interesting that you brought it up, because the psychology of a falling knife and when, and it's not actually even about selling, it's also about purchasing.
Mm.
So the fact that the stock goes down, for instance, let's say from $30 or 30 euros suddenly to 20 euros. Think about Intel. Yeah. Let's consider that as an example, a falling knife for now. It stopped falling, by the way, but let's consider that, right? It went from, what was it, 60 to 49 or 45. And I think Cisco is a similar story. Is this a falling knife or is this a value play?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's really difficult. And the same is when you have it, when you hold it and it becomes, it drops suddenly with 25, 30%. Did it become a falling knife or is it just a value play? That is for me the hardest in the psychology.
Yeah, and Cisco is a very good example there, because Phil on YouTube left me a comment because I recommended them last week. And obviously he had concerns and rightly so. And we compared them, are they going to be the next IBM? And I kind of hinted and said, look, it's a little bit early to compare them to an IBM, but there is obviously concerns, there is headwinds, but it's more of a 5G play and our equipment will be used and acquisitions have been strong. But like that, it is very hard to distinguish when something is falling. Are you catching that falling knife?
Yeah. I have learned a little bit about that when I see a falling knife. From the three statements, that is the most important in such times is for me the balance sheet. If they don't have debt or hardly debt, then I don't know any business that ever went out of business because of not having debt. I just don't know them. Yeah. So if the income is still relatively okay and they are debtless, and of course there are not too many companies at the moment without debt. But then I think you're quite safe in general. And then the question is still, of course, what is your thesis? What is the story of the stock? Do you buy into it? But for instance, with General Electric, I just made a mistake. It went from 26 euro. I bought it again at 16 euro. It was just a falling knife all the way to 6 euro. So,
yeah.
And that's where really GE is for me such a great lesson. I brought it up earlier in the shows, but there I caught a falling knife with my bare hands. And still I see the scarves in my hand from all the blood that came out of it. So I really caught it there. But that was a good learning. So after that, I did a retrospective about my psychology there. And I started doing research about it. And there's a really great video from Peter Lynch out as well around how he looks at the falling stock. People can look on YouTube, type Peter Lynch falling stock. It's a classic one. And he talks about that. And when I saw that, I felt like, I now know what I did wrong. I didn't look at the balance sheet at General Electric. When there's only headwind, bad press, there is a smell of fraud around it. I should have just not touched it and actually should have sold it.
Yeah.
Because the company was already not in a good financial situation. So that's my learning there. And I think it has not happened again, because I usually now look at the balance sheet first to see if they can carry a bad year.
Expensive lesson, but still worthy, still good to learn these.
Yeah. Do you have any other reasons of why to sell a stock?
Not particularly. Really just said thesis. A dividend cut triggers it. Clean up my portfolio because I've bought a lot of garbage. And as I mentioned before, yeah. I followed a newsletter, so I have stocks in there that I'm trimming down. It's part of the reason why I'm writing these blog posts that you'll see that I'm reviewing. Mm-hmm. So Eaton Corporation was one of them. And I was quite surprised at someone like that, because they're Irish, they're a good company, I know about them. And going into that, I would have automatically thought these are a buy. So it's worthwhile for me doing these reviews and really getting to know what's in my portfolio. So I'd imagine I'll be cutting a lot of stocks out. As I said, I'm hoping to have about 25 core stocks that I'll just build up big positions in. So that's where I'm aiming. So that's the only reason I'll be selling now, just to clean up my portfolio. A dividend cut to trigger a fundamental analysis, and then if my thesis changed, it's pretty much the only reasons I'll sell at the moment. Because really, if I want to buy, if I'm buying anything right now, I'm buying to hold, and I'm buying to hold for a long time. So
I've got one other reason why I would sell. That's when the stock is heavily overvalued. And I've done it sometimes in the past. So for instance, I'm now sometimes thinking what to do with Apple and Microsoft.
Yeah.
So one thing I always take from the investors, you should never cut on your winners. But sometimes it happens that I buy a value play, an undervalued stock, because it was just too cheap to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
And those I typically sell when they go into overvalued space. So Apple for me is, and Microsoft is quality all over the place. But so a tier one or a tier two company. So for me, in my allocation strategy, I've placed for 40 companies, right? And I split them per 10. So my first 10 are my foundation stocks. Those are the ones that I spend the most time on. And each position may be maximum 4% of my future, of my target position that I need to become financially independent. And then my second tier is 3%, third tier 2%, and fourth tier 1%. So typically in the third and fourth tier, I would sell when they are overvalued, because those are small positions. Those are not the ones that I build a whole portfolio around. And then it becomes for me more like, okay, so let's say that I bought a stock at 3 or 4% yield. It triples in 2-3 years. There was a PE when I bought it for 15. Suddenly it's a PE of 35. And it might not even be the growth stock as I see in it. I would sell it, because probably by then the yield is 1%, and I could probably shift it to another tier four, tier three category and get again 3-4% yield. So I would just bump up my dividend income, my dividend cash flow for companies, because in the tier three, tier four portfolio allocation, for me, those companies, they can go in and out. Yeah, if the story changes a little bit, I could already decide, okay, I'll take them out and I'll bring another one in. But also, if I see another interesting company that I did not consider before, I might just exchange it. So that's also for me a buy sell reason. So there's a bit more volatility in that space of my portfolio, at the bottom of my portfolio. But there, I definitely also look at when a stock is overvalued.
Yeah, and I suppose if you have a portion of your portfolio that's more growth orientated, it's definitely something to consider. Have you got an exit strategy? And sticking to that is quite hard, because you look at them stocks at the moment and they feel like they're just going to go up forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
I mentioned on Twitter today that to me this is starting to feel like the Bitcoin bubble of 2017. I remember it so clearly. I remember being in it. And I got out just before it all fell apart. Because I just got a feeling that it's going up forever. Everybody's talking about it. They're talking about it in such a way where they expect it to grow even more. And as you said, with the elections and so many things, COVID lockdowns coming up, it just doesn't feel right. If I was personally in Apple, which I wasn't, and if I bought it as a grow play, now probably would be a good time to sell. But I mean... Yeah. As you said, there's still that opportunity cost. Does it go up more? Look at Tesla. I would have said sell them at 1,000, and now look at them, they're up. Maybe
so there's 2,000. There's one issue with selling stocks that went a lot up, overvalued stock, let's say it's the capital gains tax.
Yeah.
Because then you really, for instance, in the case of Microsoft, it went 4 or 5 times up for me. If I need to pay now 19% capital gain tax, that is a few thousand euro for me, right? Which is a lot. So it does play in my mind. It means that effectively now Microsoft can go for me still 20-25% lower.
Mm-hmm.
Or I should go more than 25% lower. So that I start earning based on the capital gain tax.
And can you offset tax? So if you had someone in your portfolio that was down 20-25% and you have someone that's up, could you... Yeah. Sell one, but sell both of them and offset them against each other.
Yeah, I could. And this is why I still have GE in my portfolio. I use GE just for tax harvesting.
Yeah, because that's one way that I look at it. And I would sell one, even if I don't want to sell them, just to offset that tax. And then I would just buy them back. I think we have to give it a week, 7 days. But I would just buy that back within that period. But I can still offset the loss and the tax and maybe look at it that way.
So Apple and Microsoft, I'm just not selling because they're tier one companies for me. So these are foundation stocks for me. I bought them as dividend growth stocks. I bought Apple, I think, when it was at a PE of 13 or 14, like a few years ago, when everyone thought that the iPhone was dead. So it was for me then a value play. And yeah, it's just a pity that it's not anymore at that level, because otherwise I would just keep adding and accumulating. And for Microsoft was the same. I believed in Satya Nadella. It's just a pity that he's such a good CEO that I probably need to wait a few years before Microsoft gets a little bit back again to that. I think like, okay, let's buy it.
Yeah. And do you think this upcoming stock split, do you think would this have any bearings on your decision to sell?
No. Now a stock split for me is nothing. It's like, you know, I had a euro and now I give you, you know, 2 times 50 euro cents or something like that. It's for me still the same money.
Yeah, I see it as a positive thing, because I would imagine there's lots of investors out there that are not willing to spend a couple of hundred on stocks. And when it drops down in price, it might look cheaper and they'll probably just buy in. So you'd expect the price to go up.
Yep, but wouldn't you think that over time, the valuation always comes back to the mean?
Over time.
So on the short term, so if you want to trade and speculate, I'm with you. But for me, Apple, it's like, don't trade, but buy and hold, right? So in 10 years from now, it will be probably going back to the mean. So, and nobody will care about stock split in 2020 at that time.
Yeah, true. It's a shame that they're just too expensive for me to get involved in at the moment.
Yeah, that's the issue. They're too expensive, and I don't believe that they deserve this pricing, they had a rock, really a really great quarter. But I also believe that, I mean, I remember COVID-19 time. I also went looking for a laptop and everything because I'm more home. I didn't spend so much money because of not having all the expenses. So I had money left. I invested almost all of it, but I also used the opportunity to do an upgrade on my equipment. Now, if I do it, I expect many others to do it as well. So I think a lot of sales is being brought forward. People are now popping the champagne on Apple. I just remember I bought it for a low teen PE ratio, and now it's on 35 or something like that. So it tells me just it's mainly the multiple that expanded, not necessarily the earnings. So yeah. Anyway, that's a little bit why I sell stocks. I think I touched on everything with you regarding to when I sell stocks.
Yeah, no, that was interesting. It was quite good. So I don't have anything more to add on that unless you do.
No.
Okay, so we'll just move on then to our listeners' questions. We have a couple that came in today. There was one came in from, is it No LCO Incorporated? It's Daniel's new Twitter handle. I know he has a...
No loco.
Yeah. He has a fund set up and he's comparing it every week. So it's quite interesting to follow how he's doing.
Yeah.
But he asked the question, why are you not investing in Asian dividend stocks when there are so many good ones and so many undervalued right now?
Because I've never studied them. It's a blind spot for me. So I would love Daniel to write some blog posts about those Asian stocks and to inspire me. I just don't know them. I have a focus on US and on Europe, naturally, and that's the only reason.
Yeah, I was saying, right, I don't know enough about them, and I'm hesitant in dropping money into something that I'm not at least 50% sure on. I need to sit down. I just don't have the time to do it at the moment, so. Yeah. I don't envisage myself getting involved in that market anytime soon.
Yeah.
But like that, if Daniel, I know Daniel's doing his own podcast soon, so maybe he might talk a little bit more, give us a bit more insight on it. And
I'm happy to learn.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Okay, cool. And then the second question came from Rep Stones, again on Twitter. He said, big divvy, which is a dividend, low growth, for example, tea. Is this an investment you seek to avoid as your portfolio matures?
Poof.
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's not something that I thought too much about, but when I saw the question coming in, I thought, actually, it might even be the way around. I might actually consider having higher dividend, low growth, if I would like to bring my financial independence a little bit forward.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's not so much about the growth at that time. Yes, of course I want to grow, but it's still growing 2% and I could bring my independence 2 years forward. I would probably actually opt for T instead of other companies. So no, actually not. But I think in general, my portfolio is a mixture of, like I just mentioned, Microsoft, Apple, T. So it is actually a mixture of it, some growth stocks, some slow growers. So I would probably keep it as it is.
Yeah, no, I would agree. If your whole portfolio was big dividend, low growth, it might be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm like you, as you mature and if you want to reach that financial independence, it might make sense to go for more low growth because the dividend might be a little bit more sustainable. I know they have a big yield, but if they're grown at a slower speed, it's certainly maybe more sustainable. So I may opt for that as well, but it's definitely good to have a mixture. Like we touched on last week, buying British Tobacco and Microsoft, big yield and a small yield. Yeah. So it's always good to mix it up, but it's not something I've thought about. It was a great question because it got me to at least go through that thought process a little bit, but I'm a long way off my portfolio maturing, so I don't have to make that decision just about yet.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, great question, guys. Thanks a million. Always love questions, so keep them coming.
Yeah. So our favorite part of the week again.
On to our stock picks. Exactly. Do you know what? I'll go first this week because I know you've got quite an interesting one.
Well, so, I'm really interested in yours when I saw it popping up.
Yes, I have Danone and I bought some of these last week. So I remember I was speaking to you last week and I was concerned about the tax, and you were saying just think of it as without the tax. And that conversation kind of inspired me to go, well, do you know what? I do like the company. They got their cash flow is great. Their earnings has been good. Their dividend growth has been good. And they are pretty much undervalued at the moment. So they're one of the better European stocks. So I went out and bought 17 or 18 shares of them last week. So that's who I'm picking this week. I knew you'd be happy with that as well.
Well, I mean, I just love the company. So it's always great to hear that others love it as well. I really think, I mean, I can't predict what the price will do in the short term. I'm really betting on the health conscious consumer here. And the Danone, I think that the strategy right. And time will tell, you know, maybe I will regret it in a few years, but at least we have a good enough dividend that keeps us, compensated for it.
Exactly. Good. It was a 3.6%, I think I got my dividend yield. And they actually have a pretty big factory in Ireland, just a couple of minutes down from me. And I went to visit them before. So it's close to me. I like picking companies that I know that are close. So
yeah,
it's interesting. And the only thing that kind of stopped me before was this withholding tax with France and the pain, so to speak, to go through to collect that back. But I've kind of got over that little hurdle, so I'm going to start building a position in them now.
Yeah, super. So EMF, it's not a stock that I'm picking this week. People that follow me on Twitter have actually seen me asking a question about, hedging my portfolio a little bit. So getting back to the how I look at the market at the moment. So portfolio, or let's say the stock exchange, are at all-time high. My portfolio is a little bit overvalued, I think, based on some of those tech stocks as an example. So I was thinking, I was thinking, okay, what will now the next quarter bring us, right? In the summer, all the population was a little bit outside, nice weather, viruses do it better in the winter because people are in the trains or something like closer to each other. So I'm expecting a second wave. I'm expecting that the Democrat wins. So that's already two. I'm still not really, I'm still wondering what will happen when they stop with the, for instance, with the money printing. I don't think it can go on like this. So that's three. I'm still concerned about China and what's happening with trade. So it's already four. So I see four big risks, of which Biden and a second wave are the biggest. So I thought, like, you know, it's at all-time high. The VIX, the volatility index, is again a little bit like peaceful, let's say. So that's usually a good time to look at your options and your option strategy. So I thought, like, okay, I need to look at some indexes in this case, or individual stocks with really high debt and really high overvalue, let's say, and figure out what I want to do. So my recommendation this time is I will not give necessarily individual names or something like that. So in my case, I'm thinking about the S&P 500, ticker SPI, and the election, Democratic and or American election is on the 3rd of November. So I'm aiming to buy a put option 10% below where the S&P 500 is now, so around 300 on the SPI SPY index, to buy a put option there for December 18th. It costs around $8 at the moment, so that would mean $800. But it would hedge my portfolio pretty much. If it goes below that, let's say to 229, I would start earning money in December. But if now already, for instance, in October, cases would increase, deaths would increase again, S&P 500 would drop, this, I don't need to wait till December to sell the option then. So I'm considering now to hedge my portfolio. It's a little bit perfect time now. It's like almost silence before the storm. So,
yeah.
And I do this sometimes, and I'm okay, for instance, to use my let's say the unrealized gains that I have, let's say my portfolio will be up 10%, I don't mind putting 1% in options at that time to just put a hedge under my portfolio. And my portfolio itself actually, I mean, it's designed like that, it's based on dividend growth. So it's not like I'm a capital gain player here or a trader. So I see it more as like an additional income at that time. So yeah, it is a little bit speculation.
Yeah, look, it certainly makes sense to have a little bit of protection there. Just out of interest, because it's not an area that, as you know, that I've been involved in much. Can you do that on the Giro?
On the Giro, not on the American stocks.
You can.
I do it on my other broker.
You can on the indexes, though, can you? I believe you can.
I haven't found the QQQ, for instance, from the tech stocks. I haven't found it today. Okay. I was looking for it. But you can take a European index where you feel it's heavily overvalued. But I can tell you that the European indexes are a little bit lagging when it comes to, let's say, the PE ratios and such compared to S&P 500 and such. But if you look at currently at the PE ratios from the S&P 500, they are not that high necessarily, right? I just think they're still priced on past earnings, on trailing 12-month earnings. So there's an earnings contraction going on. So hence why I think that what you see today is not necessarily what you'll see in half a year from now. And then I believe that the index usually goes back to the mean.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of speculation play. You don't hear that often from me. But I thought like, well, end of summer, soon autumn starts, shit will hit the fan probably, elections coming up. Let's try it. It's worth a gamble.
Either that or you're drinking too much tequila.
Well, you know, I like tequila.
So that's it. I think we've come to the end of the show.
Yeah.
You said that was a very interesting stock pick, and it's something I'll be following you on Twitter and be chatting to you about, because it's interesting to follow and see how that will play out. It's not something that I'm going to do myself because I don't know enough about it, but to see it play out and to do a bit of study, it might be something to look for in the future for me.
Yeah. Usually I lose on buying put options, and usually I earn a lot on selling put options. So, yeah, we'll see. Good. Thanks, EMF, again for this episode. Thanks for all the listeners for staying with us again till the end. I hope you enjoyed this show. We for sure did. And, well, we hope to see you actually tomorrow, because this is recorded on Friday. Tomorrow at the dividend quiz. We still have quite some preparation to do, but we're getting there. Tomorrow we will be ready. Keep an eye on us on Twitter. If you're listening to us actually on Saturday morning, we'll share the link still to the to be able to log in. And if we don't see you at the dividend quiz, then see you next time again on Friday, and have a good week all. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone. See you soon.